south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, how about a couple of boots on the ground stories? I know you're always up for one or two of those. But first, I want to read a couple of responses to what I said a couple of shows ago about how certain habits of certain expats I know down here drive me nuts, and so I try to avoid those guys. I'm sure you've got friends and ex-friends and relatives like that, too. You know, people you used to tolerate, but as you get older, you find you don't need those people anymore. Well, you know, after I mentioned that on the show, I got some emails, naturally, in response. Some people said I was a jerk and way too picky. Could be. However, most people didn't throw daggers at me. They were talking about their own situations, their own dislikes and things that drive them nuts. Like the American lady who wrote to say she can't stand the way her husband chooses food, among other things. But as she points out, she's on her third husband and therefore cuts him a lot of slack. She doesn't want to go through that mess again just because the guy eats like a pig. You can't have it all, right? Well, you can come close. Even so, most of the emails were legit. Like this one from Josh. He says, "Hey, Johnny, I've got male friends and relatives who get on my nerves and drive me nuts, too. Want to know my pet peeves? Well, even if you don't, here they are. Let me start with the worst. Guy friends who are only able to talk about sports and almost nothing else. There have been times I remember where a guy will come up to me and talk about some game, and when I say, please, no more, don't bother, I don't follow sports. And after that, they have almost no idea what to do. They're kind of at a loss. They've got nothing but sports and maybe sex percolating in their brains. Oh, and by the way, when guys show me pictures of their wives or kids or girlfriends, or these days at my age, grandkids, oh, they're so proud of their good-looking, genius grandkids. They used to say that about their kids until they realized they were douchebags, and now it's grandkids. Man, there's nothing more boring than that. And when they whip out the phone and start showing you those grandkids and kids, you're stuck. The question is, how do you get out of it? It truly is painful. I'd rather get a root canal or a COVID shot. Well, not quite. However, I do have a defense mechanism. I get them one better. I go into my smartphone, pull up the gallery, and show them a picture of me on a giant cruise ship, a picture of me next to the Eiffel Tower, a picture of me next to the Great Pyramids, a picture of me on top of the Great Wall of China, a picture of me at Machu Picchu. And I tell them, you know how I was able to afford all that? No kids. The looks I get from people when I pull that stuff out? Priceless. Though occasionally someone will have a comeback. They'll say something snotty like, that's all fine and good, but who's going to take care of you when you get old? And I tell them, an expensive live-in nurse in a very tight outfit. That generally caps off the conversation nicely. But back to boring guys who talk about nothing but sports. He says, there's nothing worse than a fat, middle-aged dude wearing an expensive jersey with some other guy's name on it. It's even worse at playoff times when their team wins some kind of key game. He says, I got a brother-in-law like that, who will say things like, hey, bro, did you see the Red Sox game last night? We did it. We beat them. Really, Johnny, is there anything more stupid than that? We beat them, all right. Of course, my pot-bellied brother-in-law with his arthritic knees was the key factor in that success. Yeah, we beat him. We sure did. All right, for Joe's next pet peeve, he says is short men with Napoleon complexes. He says, Johnny, do you have any friends like that? It really shows when they try to give you the grip of death during a handshake. How annoying is that? Trying to make someone wince with a handshake is not demonstrating that you're a man. It demonstrates you're an asshole. Joe says the other pet peeve he has is guys who make sure you know the price of everything in their life. The cost of their car, their clothes, their house, their watches, the restaurants they go to, their vacations, etc. In fact, he says one of my friends, who's less and less a friend now, carries around pictures of his house in Florida that his ex-wife got in their divorce, just to have bragging rights to what he used to have. How pathetic is that? Good one, Joe. Then Joe says, Another pet peeve I have about my guy friends is the ones that always talk about the cool stuff they used to have, as well as the hot girls they used to go out with in high school and college. I can't stand when a bunch of couch potatoes way past their prime, who always seem to bring up their ancient high school or college glory days. Like we really care now. We didn't give a shit back then. Worse yet, those stories keep getting embellished year over year. That includes guy friends who set up trophy rooms in their basements with dusty little golf and bowling trophies, some of them cheap plastic, not even metal, that don't mean dick to anyone else in the world. Stuff that was dumpster worthy back in the 80s. Think about the guy's poor wife. After all, she's the one that won't have them in any regular room in the house, only the basement. Then Joe says, I can't stomach guys that say bro at the beginning, middle, and end of every sentence. Or guys that repeatedly use the word epic, or game changer, or dude, or bro, or dog, or homie, or yo, every time you run into them. And of course, Johnny, I'm with you on banning the A word, the awesome word. All right, me Johnny here with my two centavos. I'm with you on most of that stuff, Joe. Funny how the word cool, C-O-O-L, has always been, well, cool. Have you noticed it never quite seems to go out of style? Even when it's almost on the verge of, well, being uncool. It's still hanging in there after all these years. Ain't that cool? Then Joe says, Johnny, there are so many gross things about guys that ladies would absolutely freak out about if they only knew. Like the number of guys who never wash their hands before or after going to the John, or after a butt scratch or untangling your boys. Oh, and one last thing, Johnny. I really believe it was a much better world. Pertaining to the following case. When two guys had a disagreement that just could not be settled verbally, they could just walk out in the parking lot and beat the hell out of each other. And when the dust settled, win or lose, they'd have a drink, laugh about it, and become new best friends. Can't do that anymore. They'd both be in jail, get a big fine, get forced into counseling, and be placed on antipsychotic meds the rest of their lives. All right, thanks for that, Joe. You're spot on with a number of those things, and you're absolutely right. I do not want to see the house some guy's wife got in the divorce. Not interested. You know, it's a funny thing about sports. In my family, the male members are absolutely nuts about it. They'll spend family get-togethers watching and talking about sports the entire time. Now, as for me, it's not that I don't like professional sports. I collected baseball cards, went to Braves and Cubs and Packers and Bears games up through high school. That's when I completely gave up listening and paying attention to professional sports. You see, something happened in the whole sports world during my high school years. When I was growing up prior to age 18, all the big sports heroes like Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, Don Drysdale, Billy Williams, Warren Spahn, Don Drysdale, names that have been completely forgotten already. Anyway, way back when, those sports heroes would spend their entire career on one team, 10, 20, even 25 years. And then, with their playing days over, they'd become coaches of the very same team they played on. Wasn't about money back then, it was team loyalty. It was the same guys all the time on the same teams, until they aged out or crippled out. Then suddenly, little by little, the big money came, and team loyalty went into the crapper. It was all about the money. All about the money. So I decided right there in high school that I wasn't going to root for any team that could be bought and paid for. And that's what teams have been since then, completely bought and paid for. Whatever team has the most money to spend gets the best players. That's the way it is. Wasn't like that when I was a kid. Though I can see if you live in New York, Boston, Chicago, LA, whatever. As a spectator, you're going to have some natural loyalty to the home team. But it's not in any way like having loyalty to your high school teams or your college team. Money and buying the best players has absolutely nothing to do with that. So anyway, for years now, that's been my defense for not paying attention to professional sports. However, I do admire one-on-one professional sports like tennis, golf, boxing, etc. because it's one person against everyone else. It's not like team sports at all where money can buy the whole team, and in some cases, the team members don't even like each other. They don't even like the city they're playing for. Come on, do you think the Milwaukee Bucks players like living in Milwaukee? Don't you think they'd much, much rather be in a place where the action is, like LA, Chicago, New York, Miami? You know, I'm certain they're just wearing the same colored uniforms and jerseys because of the money, the deals, and the contracts they signed. But you knew that already, right? All right, here's today's first boots on the ground story. You know, I always wonder why they refer to it as boots on the ground. Sounds so military. you know, like American troops have landed? Why not sandals or Nikes or Pumas or penny loafers on the ground? I guess on second thought, boots on the ground really does work. Anyway, just this last weekend, I was in a middle-level mall. You know, here in Latin America, there are three kinds of shopping malls. Well, maybe more, but I break them down to three. You've got your basic mall that regular, average, and below-average Latin Americans shop at. You walk in, they're usually a little bit old, kind of shabby, rough around the edges, just loaded with cut-rate clothing stores with sale signs and posters everywhere. Oftentimes, the stores themselves will have card tables or some kind of table set up outside in front of the store, right down the mall causeways where you walk, just loaded with shoes and clothing and items on sale. The thing is, they won't let you get away with that in a medium or high-end mall. They're more orderly. They've got more rules and regs. Though, a medium or high-end mall might have a special day for that, once a week or once a month. Whereas, for low-end malls, merchandise kind of bursting through the door out into the walkway is sort of the norm. Now, don't get me wrong. By all means, do shop at the low-end malls. That's where you get the best deals. I go there all the time. For example, right downtown in Guatemala City, they've got a big low-end mall. In Zone 10, one of the first malls I had ever been into in Guatemala, it's perfectly safe and fun to shop in. It's called Los Próceres Mall. Los Próceres Mall. The thing is, in Latin America, you could tell right away what a mall's like, depending on what kind of cars you see in the parking lot. A lot of junks and beaters? Well, it's a low-end mall. The thing is, though, most people that frequent low-end malls don't even own cars or motorcycles. They're coming in on chicken buses, which is also a very good way to determine what kind of mall it is. If there's a big-ass chicken bus stop in front of it and people are filing in and out by the hundreds, well, you get the picture. By the way, don't be afraid to go into any mall in Latin America. They're all safe inside. Even the ones in real crap neighborhoods are totally safe once you're inside. By the way, that Los Próceres Mall I'm talking about in Zone 10 is in one of the safest zones in Guatemala City. And I think the reason why it is a low-class mall now in a high-rent, high-class neighborhood is because it was one of the very first malls in Guatemala. So in effect, it started out as a high-end mall, well, maybe the only mall. Then, years later, as newer, more classier malls started getting built around the area, the middle and upper middle classes, who are very class conscious in Latin America, shifted their allegiance. They began to think it was beneath them to go to that mall, because that's where the common people shop. Turns out, the upper middle and wealthy classes in Central America don't mind being shoulder to shoulder with indigenous people in a shopping mall as long as those people are working there, not shopping there. I know, it sounds terrible, but that's the state of things here in Latin America. It's a place of extreme classism and racism, though not white against black because there are very few black people down here. Very few white Caucasians, too. Turns out there's a heavy-duty amount of classism between upscaled, usually lighter-skinned Latinos, and the shorter, usually darker, indigenous people, who basically are the real motors of the society. They do all the grunt work and all the agricultural work, too. Just ask good old Captain Mango. He runs a coffee plantation down here. And if I remember correctly, every last one of his employees, his troops, as he calls them, is an indigenous guy. Oh, and it doesn't need to be said, but Captain Mango's a real straight shooter, except on Tequila Tuesdays. Then he can't shoot for shit. And because over the years, he's hired so many indigenous people and he lives out in the boonies on the coffee plantation himself, so many of his neighbors are indigenous people too. Not to mention, quite a few of his buddies are indigenous guys. In fact, he's one of the few expat gringos I know who has indigenous friends, because mostly, the indigenous people keep to themselves. They don't have many gringo or Latino friends. Mostly because Latinos avoid hanging with them. It's sort of odd. As a matter of fact, I don't know of any Latinos who have real bona fide indigenous friends. I've been at many, many Latino parties. Christmas parties, anniversaries, quince annual parties, the works. And I've only seen indigenous people working, cooking, serving at those parties. Somehow they don't get invited as guests. So back to this shopping mall thing. I said there are three kinds of shopping malls. The low-end malls for the common people. A little chaotic and rough around the edges, but lots of deals. Like that Los Próceres Mall. Then there's the more middle and upper middle class malls, like one of the newer ones in Guatemala City, also located in wealthier Zone 10, by the way, only about 6 or 8 blocks from Los Próceres Mall, the low-end mall. That newer middle and upper middle class mall is called Oakland Mall. Talk about a gringo wannabe name, huh? Oakland Mall. There are no oaks in Latin America. Sorry to say, the nearest oak's about 2,000 miles away. But there's an Oakland Mall. And it is a much higher-end mall, kind of like every mall you see in the United States. It's as if they cloned one in Cleveland and brought it down to Zone 10 in Guatemala. So, compared to Los Próceres Mall, more organized, better details, better parking, nicer, bigger, cleaner elevators, nicer, cleaner, more organized food court, better dressed people, nicer cars in the parking lot, but not many deals. And because of that, because it's slightly upper scale on weekends, the food court is jam-packed. People come often with their kids, don't buy anything, just window shop, and then hang out at the food court. You could tell by strolling through the food court, there's a lot of high school and college dating going on, too. It's the dating hangout. So you have young adults and teenagers even dressing up to go to that mall and hang out at the food court. Of course, in middle and upper middle class Latin American malls, they've got all the first world franchises you're used to, like Forever 21, Stradivarius, TGIF, and Starbucks. Dozens more, too. Now, just a couple of blocks away from that is a very high-end mall called Fontabella Mall. Nice, classy French name, don't you think? Though I've never met a French person in Guatemala, ever. Anyway, some of the cars in the parking lot are spectacular. Of course, they've got the usual Mercedes and Audis, mixed in with the occasional Lotus, Maserati, or Porsche, with the occasional Lexus and Tesla thrown in. And, of course, the mandatory electric car charging station that no one uses. Oh, and one more thing. You'll see bodyguards in dark suits walking around those halls, too. It's pretty pathetic when you think about it. You waltz around the place, and you see all the perfectly made-up, wealthy and wannabe wealthy people just hanging out with their perfect fingernails and hair, showing off the fact they've got real gold and diamond jewelry. Well, probably, anyway, with a real Rolex thrown in here and there, too. Then again, I wouldn't know the difference. But it is show and tell at every high-end mall in Latin America. So wealthy ladies do have a place that can wear their real jewelry. Why not? You wouldn't want to be walking around the streets with that stuff. But at Fontabella Mall, it's perfectly fine, because it's the place to be, the place to be noticed. Oh, and do note, there are no deals to be had in that mall. But there are some very nice, good, and high-end restaurants there. Funny thing, too, it's a mall without a food court. I was told by a local architect they planned it that way. It keeps out the riffraff that would just come and hang out there all day. Yep, Fontabella Mall. I recommend you visit there at least once. It's a trip. I'll have you know, I never shop there. Though I've been there a few times for meetings and such. Funny thing, too, when someone wants to impress you a bit, someone who wants to sell you something or who's got a business proposition, oftentimes they'll set up the first meeting not at McDonald's or Starbucks, but at Fontabella Mall. Always makes me a little leery. It's way too obvious. They're trying to put on the dog for you. I'll tell you, man, there's no one who hangs out in that place, guy or gal, who isn't either a high roller, very high maintenance, or probably both. In fact, expat Eddie put it nicely. He said, if a gringa from the States comes down to Latin America and looking for a wealthy Latino boyfriend, all she'd have to do is put on her best Nike jogging duds and a pair of yoga pants, then start coffee clutching and window shopping at Fontabella Mall. In no time, she'll get hit on by a rich guy, or two, or ten. Remember, Latinos love gringas. It's every Latino guy's secret, even not-so-secret fantasy. So, gringas, expat gringas, why settle for a poor one? Remember what your mother told you. It's just as easy to find a rich guy than a poor one. At least that's what my mom told my sisters. I know what you're thinking. Whatever happened to that boots on the ground story, I promised. Well, I'm getting to that. In fact, a couple days ago, I was in one of those medium-style malls, like Oakland Mall. Was a Saturday around 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And out on the main walkway, the center area, there was an event going on. They had a big stage platform set up and some ladies dancing in yoga pants. It was a Zumba class, about 50 young ladies dancing. And two professional instructors, two ladies, leading the charge. Well, it just so happened right alongside the stage, there was a nice coffee shop. I sat down at the only table available. Of course, there were tables inside the coffee shop and some outside on the walkway, right next to where the Zumba dance thing was going on. In fact, there were tables all over the place, probably 30 of them, with people sitting down watching the ladies doing their Zumba. I was lucky enough to sit at the last available table. Now, right next to my table, there was a table with four chairs. But no people sitting there, only a big notebook flipped open. And me, curious me, looked over at the notebook. It had all kinds of writing and annotations in it. Very meticulous writing. I mean, almost perfect calligraphy, very precise. Plus, some of the words and phrases had been highlighted with a colored marker. I can tell you this, in all my years down here in Latin America, it was the most organized notebook I'd ever seen. Now, I know this is going to sound judgmental, not too cool. The first thing that went through my mind was that the notebook could not be a Latinos or Latinas. They're just not that organized or meticulous. No way. Though, I could be wrong. So anyway, I ordered a coffee and a plain croissant. And about 10 minutes later, a handsome Antonio Banderas-style Latino walked up to that table and sat down. Not in front of the notebook, but on another chair. Yes, he really did look like Antonio Banderas. Only the old Antonio Banderas, when he was handsome and fit and everything. Not the withered, anorexic-looking Banderas you see today. God, what happened to that guy? Anyway, this guy, I guess he must have been 35 or 40, was dressed to the hilt. Classy. I didn't bother to say anything to the guy. I just got back to my coffee. I moved my chair out of his line of sight so I could see what was happening with the Zumba girls. Thank God they were playing salsa, not reggaeton. Or I'd have gulped my coffee and been out of there in a split second. I'd have been out of there, no matter how many girls in yoga pants were wiggling their butts in front of me. Anyway, soon enough, out of the corner of my eye, I saw a lady sit down in that chair right next to that notebook. She was a gringa. I was right. So I slid my chair over and said to her, "You know, I had a bet going with myself. I saw your notebook and how extremely well organized it was. I said to myself, man, this cannot be a Latina's or Latino's notebook. I've never seen one that organized." And she laughed. She said, "No, I'm from Indianapolis," I think she said. She'd been living down here in Latin America for 5 or 6 years now. She also said she's very organized because she's an engineer, manufacturing engineer. You know, they design and set up processing plants and factory manufacturing systems, etc. And then, of course, I mentioned in a past life I was an engineer, so we got to talking a bit. Turns out she's 50 years old and newly married. She introduced me to her husband, her younger husband, she said, the Antonio Banderas doppelganger sitting across the way, who, by the way, couldn't speak any English. I thought that rather strange. Most all wealthy Latinos these days have gone to bilingual schools, so they know English. But he didn't. I thought that strange. Now, here's the punchline. They got up and left before I did. When she got up and turned to say goodbye, I noticed she was missing her left arm, lopped off at the elbow. I hadn't noticed it till then because she was wearing a kind of flowing cape thing. And at just that moment, her husband's telephone rang. He picked it up and started talking. Now, I hadn't heard him speak before, but I've been down here long enough, 30 plus years now. I instantly picked up on the fact that he was speaking in kind of low-class Spanish slang, street slang. He spoke in a way your parents would never let you get away with if you lived in a high-class or highly educated home. A Latino or Latina would never speak like that if they went to an expensive bilingual helicopter school, that's for sure. It became obvious to me in that moment that she'd found herself a handsome, uneducated Latino. Exactly the opposite of what so many ladies up in the first world accuse gringo males of doing. Namely, moving to Latin America and hooking up with a beautiful but stupid or undereducated Latina girl. Well, it's nice to know it works both ways, right? By the way, they seemed quite happy, so no judgment there. The moral of that story, well, seems like there's lots of morals to that story. Take your pick. All right, changing gears again. A couple of weeks ago, I reconnected with a friend of mine, a gringo, who owns a little hotel in Costa Rica. A little mom-and-pop hotel on the Pacific coast in Manuel Antonio. It's 12 units, a little swimming pool, and a couple of blocks from the ocean. He's been trying to get out from under it for a long, long time, but he made a big mistake. Now, though he hates it, he's kind of stuck there. It seems many years ago, when he first had the idea to open up such a place, he'd only been in Costa Rica about 6 months. He didn't know the rules. He didn't know Spanish. But he had a bilingual Costa Rican girlfriend who showed him the ropes, introduced him to the right people. Everything was going fine till he discovered about 2 years in that she was screwing around on him. He went to a lawyer to find out what he could do about it and found out he was absolutely trapped, even though her name didn't appear on any titles or property. He'd been living with her long enough. I think over there a year is the minimum amount of time to be a common law wife, which meant she'd get half of everything. And his lawyer advised him it would be worse than that. There'd be a big war. And he said anything could happen. Like, for example, he could get his passport embargoed and have to leave the country. And my buddy, being a kind of a laid-back, non-confrontational gringo type, he decided not to act, to just wait it out. So he's been in limbo for a long, long time. Wants to sell out his half, but no one wants to buy half. it's all or nothing, and his girlfriend wants a lot more for her half than he wants for his. Needless to say, they're not getting along too well, but that's another story. Anyway, we caught up with each other after a long, long time, and we got to talking about COVID and how it ruined the tourism business. We got to talking about how he and the rest of the hotel and tourist operators learned how to survive. He said, basically, you cut your rates and you take everybody and anybody. You lay people off, cut back on everything, and lower your standards. Then, I don't know what happened, but he got into a discussion about which type of tourists or visitors are the most irritating. Since, he said, especially since COVID, tourism, like airports and congested traffic, brings out the worst in people. He says, I know when I get up in the morning and check the reservation ledger, who's going to check in that day. I know instantly, he said, if I'm going to have a good or bad day. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, if there's a British couple coming in, it's usually fine. They're relaxed and can be funny and are interesting. But if there's more than two Brits, they're traveling in groups, they're going to drink just to drink and they're going to get out of hand. And someone, usually a British woman or women, will puke on the sheets. And he said the British have a habit of pocketing a future packed lunch from the breakfast buffet. Oh, and drunken Brits, by the way, he said, have a tendency to fall or jump off balconies. But again, only when they're in groups. When they come alone or as a couple, they're just fine. He said, that's why we like the Dutch and the Scandinavians. They live up to their reputation as being perpetually laid back. And when they get drunk, they just fall asleep in the nearest chair. But thankfully, though, he says, the Russians and the Ukrainians are scarce these days. He said, in the old days, we could spot them a mile away in the parking lot, getting out of their rental cars. Big, burly, white, tattooed guys with a million gold chains, and their skinny, pure blonde women, always wearing loud, ugly, expensive clothes that never match. He said, we never liked those Russians or Ukrainians when they did come. He said, by the way, speaking of Brits, there were a group that came in 2015 and really trashed my bar. They still owe me money. I'll never get it. He said, the Chinese and the Japanese are easy to deal with. They always seem happy, easy to please. However, the worst tourists, he says, are the French. I said, now where have I heard that before? He said, it never fails. You have a French couple at the breakfast buffet. They inspect the food and the pastries inside out and upside down, like they're looking for baked-in pubic hairs or something. Their smile's almost always fake, and they never give a sincere compliment. It's practically impossible to make them happy, he says. They almost always have something negative to say. And finally, he says, I don't want to leave out the Germans. Germans and backpackers, worst tippers of all. But they can drink, and they sing when they drink. But unlike the Brits, even when in groups, they always pay their bills.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.